This is Kendall Mead of Mascot, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary, and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every morning, every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books. After the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Shannon Greer Photography in Brooklyn, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. On June 12th, a 27-year-old African-American man was killed by Atlanta police while running away from after a struggle in a Wendy's drive-thru line that was digitally recorded. That led to the Atlanta police chief resigning and large protests and a small riot in the streets of the southern city. The video had not circulated everywhere by the time most local protests were held the next day. On June 13th, in the Hudson Valley, protests began at 9 a.m. in Highland Falls and at West Point, where President Donald Trump addressed graduates at the U.S. Military Academy. More people rallied at 12:30 p.m. in Saratoga Springs at Congress Park, and several hundred turned out at 1 p.m. in Cohoes, according to the Times Union. Those protesters marched from Berkeley Park to the Cohoes City Hall, passing Sam Gendron's house along the way. His yard was decorated with a Blue Lives Matter sign and a Thin Blue Line flag. After protesters chanted, quote, "All lives matter when black lives matter," unquote, Gendron confronted the group, quote, "My family's been here since 1926 and we'll be here when you leave," unquote, Gendron told the crowd. "Calm the expletive down. I have little kids in the house. I have to explain this expletive to an expletive 7- and 8-year-old, unquote. Later, at City Hall, Cohoes Mayor William T. Keeler thanked the crowd for being peaceful. Quote, "Let's see what Keeler does about it," unquote, one organizer told the crowd. Quote, "Now we know who you are," unquote. There were other protests June 13th in Beacon and Saratoga and Chatham. Several hundred people turned out to the northern Columbia County town. Protesters posted videos online with some of the sounds of the Chatham protest.
Mama!
I can't breathe!
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 Mama!
On June 14th, there are two protests planned at noon, two more at 1 p.m., and another 1:30 p.m. At noon, Marlboro hosts a Let's Make a Difference Together event at Kluwit Schantz Memorial Park, and Hastings-on-Hudson also has an event. There is a walk-jog-run for change at 1 p.m. in Gloversville at Darling Field, and a Tarrytown We Don't Tolerate Racism event at 303 South Broadway. And at 1:30 p.m. on Sunday in Walden, there is a Black Lives Matter protest and march in Bradley Park. Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times Union that a Rensselaer Polytech Institute engineering professor has been fired after students filed bias complaints about his inflammatory social media activity. Students in the last week compiled a record of objectionable tweets, retweets, Twitter and Facebook posts by Mohammed Abdul Siald, The posts were described as, quote, Islamophobic and transphobic, or promoting of far-right conspiracy theories. Abul Siad has since made his social media accounts private, but he privately confirmed his termination, tweeting to a supporter, quote, they just terminated me after 20-plus years with no complaints of discrimination from any student during that period. Welcome to the USSA, unquote. An RPI spokesperson said he could not comment on specific personnel matters. An RPI student requesting anonymity said in an email, quote, for us students, this isn't an issue of politics or restricting free speech. His presence behind the keyboard is one of overt hostility toward those of different religions, ethnicities, gender, and sexual orientations, all while being in a position of power at a respected institution over just these groups, unquote. Some students were surprised by his social media activity, saying he had not shared those views in class except of the occasional reference to his support for President Donald Trump, and not everyone agreed that he should be fired for his tweets. Of late, students at the Troy campus have been raising concerns on social media about the racism and aggression minority students face at the school, such as a noose that was placed on campus in 2018. School officials have not directly addressed the students' social media posts. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Melanie Lukosevic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that U.S. Representatives Antonio Delgado, Sean Maloney, and Paul Tonko of the Hudson Valley have sent a letter to William Flynn, president and chief executive officer of Amtrak, asking that the company preserve community access to the Hudson River while maintaining safety along the tracks. A plan to upgrade fencing around local Amtrak rail crossings to prevent vehicles and pedestrians from crossing the tracks has been in the works for 2 years. As originally proposed, the project would also block access to portions of the Hudson River and the shoreline for hunters, fishermen, and other recreational users. Planning for the project has been on hold since the beginning of the coronavirus outbreak. The congressman's letter acknowledged that Amtrak officials have met with local officials, but asked that more be done to address the issue of river access raised by several local communities. Quote, we are interested in seeing a cooperative effort that maintains and ultimately increases shoreline access throughout the corridor. And we believe, as Amtrak has done in other parts of the country, that this can be achieved while appropriately managing the level of risk, unquote, they wrote. Amtrak and the State Department of Transportation are still in the planning phases, and the cost of the project is still undetermined, but a new timeline for the planning process is in the works. Several towns in Columbia County would see fencing installed if the project moves forward, including Germantown, Hudson, and Stockport. Scenic Hudson has also called for access to the river to be maintained. Scenic Hudson President Ned Sullivan said, quote, working with Amtrak, we can find common sense 21st century ways to reduce risk without losing already scarce river access. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting that courts in the 3rd Judicial District, comprised of Columbia, Green, Sullivan, and Ulster counties, and the 9th Judicial District, including Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, and Westchester counties, are now entering Phase 2 of a gradual return to in-person operations. For the past 2 weeks, judges and staff in the two districts have been returning to their courthouses. The goal of Phase 2 is to safely increase courthouse foot traffic in a gradual manner so courts are able to select matters that require an in-person appearance while continuing to maximize virtual appearances. Essential family court matters will be conducted in person and heard by the assigned judge. Criminal, juvenile, delinquency, and mental hygiene law proceedings concerning a hospitalized adult will be held virtually and heard by the assigned judge. Non-essential matters will continue to be held virtually. Non-essential court staff will continue to work virtually during this phase. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Sunday with a high near 66 and a low around 48. Monday should also be sunny with a high of 71 and a low around 51. And Tuesday is sunny as well with a high near 76 and a low around 55. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peggy Awesh of Catskill, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Let's begin.
You have 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't worry if you can't follow everything that is said. Now repeat.
I love books. Do you love books? Books are great. Read more books. Listen to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM. Hooray!
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am a student of online classes, and I am also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're going to do today. We didn't pregame, so I don't know what you all are going to talk about today, whether it's a book or a bookish thing. Who wants to get started?
Oh, we have Lena start for today. It's totally not because I'm not sure what I'm going to talk about yet.
Not that at all.
Well, no. What about Emily? It's totally not also because I have no idea what to talk about.
Okay. I can share a book. I don't think I've talked about this on the show yet. It is a book that I listen to on audio through the Audiobook Sync Summer Sync program, which is a free audiobook program that's offered every summer. This year it's being offered through Overdrive's Sora app, which is S-O-R-A, which you can access with your library card. Actually, I don't even know if you need your library card for this. Never mind, I take it back. You don't need your library card. You just have to get like the code from their website, or you can log in through your school account. So the Sora app is where you would get these, and it's Sync is S-Y-N-C, and every year they come up with a schedule of audiobook releases to give out for free. So every week they have two audiobook downloads that you can download for free, and then you can keep them on your device until you decide to delete them. And they try to have thematic connections between the books. Sometimes it's really obvious, sometimes it's a little less so. But there was one that was in this program earlier this spring called The 57 Bus, A True Story of Two Teenagers and the Crime That Changed Their Lives by Dashka Slater. And it's a book I'd wanted to read for a long time because I heard it was very good. Pretty sure it won multiple awards. Let's see. Yeah, it won the Stonewall Book Award for Children's and Young Adult Literature, California Book Award for Young Adult, Los Angeles Times Book Prize for Young Adult Literature, Rhode Island Teen Book Award, Evergreen Teen Book Award, and more. And I don't often read nonfiction that's written for teens. I often read nonfiction written for kids and adults, but for some reason I don't hit up the teen nonfiction section that often. But this one was very good, and I'm going to read the description for it. One teenager in a skirt, one teenager with a lighter, one moment that changed both of their lives forever. If it weren't for the 57 bus, Sasha and Richard never would have met. Both were high school students from Oakland, California, one of the most diverse cities in the country, but they inhabited different worlds. Sasha, a white teen, lived in the middle-class foothills and attended a small private school. Richard, a black teen, lived in the crime-plagued flatlands and attended a large public one. Each day, their paths overlapped for a mere 8 minutes. But one afternoon on the bus ride home from school, a single reckless act left Sasha severely burned and Richard charged with two hate crimes and facing life imprisonment. The case garnered international attention, thrusting both teenagers into the spotlight. And so the book centers on that event, but really gives good attention to both the victim of the crime and the perpetrator of the crime, and does so in a way that I think is really compassionate and echoes the compassion of the youth involved and their families as well.
And so I thought it was a very interesting read that touched on a lot of issues around like juvenile justice and the juvenile justice system and race and gender. And it's also just interesting seeing how like one small choice or one small moment can impact your life so incredibly. So Richard, who makes a really stupid decision that is not well thought out, it's not premeditated, he makes this horrible decision that impacts both Sasha's life and his life horribly. And it's really sad. But it's also interesting to think about the fact that even the perpetrator of this crime that was so horrible is a human being and has like positive aspects to them. And so I think it's interesting looking at it in terms of like wanting to never give up on people, especially on youth when they make horrible decisions. And yeah, I thought it was very interesting that it wasn't just placing people in these boxes of victim and criminal, that it really looked at them as whole human beings. And it read really interestingly. I feel like sometimes nonfiction can read in a way that's really dry or too based on like facts or data, or I don't know. This one was just very human, had a lot in common with like a memoir, even though it wasn't a memoir. It had that sort of feeling of like a narrative story about a person's life, or in this case, multiple people's lives.
Yeah.
Wow. So highly suggested. And I think with the sync program, even if you don't catch the release the week that it's released, you can still get it throughout the summer. So as long as the program's going on, you would be able to access the downloads.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to listen to that for free, you can do that during the summer sync program. Yeah, so the website to access these titles is audiobooksync.com, and that's audiobook, like audiobook, A-U-D-I-O-B-O-O-K, and then sync is S-Y-N-C, so audiobooksync.com.
Cool.
And the 57 bus was actually released the first week of the program this summer, and it was paired up with Monday's Not Coming, which I've talked about on the show before, which was written by Tiffany D. Jackson, who we were supposed to have the pleasure of meeting at this year's Book Fest, but alas, did not. And then this week's books are Like No Other by Una LaMarche and Into White by Randy Pink. So I'm looking forward to listening to those. They sound interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like No Other's been on my to-read list for a while. I hadn't heard of Into White before, but it sounded good.
Yeah.
So what do you all have to talk about today?
Last night I reread Nimona in a moment of weakness. I reread it again.
A moment of greatness, you mean?
A moment of greatness. I love that comic so much.
Yay. Can you tell our listeners about it?
Yes. Let me look up a summary, because if I try to talk about it myself, I'll just start gushing about it, about how good it is. I can't trust myself to talk about it. Nimona is a young adult graphic novel by Noelle Stevenson, which follows the adventures of Nimona as she serves as sidekick to the villainous Lord Ballister Blackheart, determined to overthrow the Institute of Law Enforcement and Heroics, believing them to be corrupt.
That is a short description.
It is a short description, and I'm not sure if that's what the description on the back says, but
it is what
it's
it is.
Very good. It's very good, and I believe it started out as a webcomic, which I love, because now that it's published on paper and like in a physical copy, you can read the first two pages and see how it really, like, the art evolves from a simple webcomic to like a full-blown story at the end. The art like gets more advanced, it gets more detailed. I love it so much. It's so good.
I also love Nimona. It is a wonderful standalone graphic novel. I wouldn't have minded a sequel, but I also think it's beautiful as it is. And it's a nice mix of like funny and exciting, and has some more serious moments too. But I think it's primarily reads as funny to me.
And I believe Noelle Stevenson worked on the reboot of She-Ra on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I have not finished that show, but it has recently, I think, either concluded or concluded a season. And I would love to get back into it. I only made it to episode 8 before I stopped watching. I don't remember why I stopped watching.
Life.
Yeah, just life probably got in the way. I probably watched it during like a long vacation, and then the vacation ended and I just didn't have time to get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really should, because it was good. And you can like totally see like Noelle Stevenson's like art style and like her voice in that show, like similar to Nimona. So I really need to get back into it.
Yeah, she also was one of the, or maybe she was the creator of Lumberjanes. And I know there were a number of contributors to that series, but that's also a very fun series that I think Amelia would like as well as Nina.
I think I have the first issue, but I haven't read it yet.
I forget which one I'm up to. All I know is that the latest one that we have at the library, I've already read. So I have to, the other ones are checked out. So I don't know, because I kind of have to peek at them to remember if I've read them or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a series that I'd like to pick up again. Another series that reminds me of is The Adventures of Superhero Girl by Faith Erin Hicks. Or I guess it's not really a series, but it started off as not a web series, but a newspaper-based series where it was like a comic strip for a local newspaper in, I think, Halifax in Canada, I believe. But it's about a young superhero. I think she's like college age or maybe in her young 20s, who has trouble finding a job. She can't really hold down a regular job because she has to tend to her superhero duties, but then there's not much crime in Canada and superhero fighting doesn't pay. So she's like always struggling to get by. And then she also has like a superhero brother, who I think his name is Kevin, who is kind of like the golden boy, like the superhero that everybody like bows down to and is like, it's Kevin. Oh my God. And she's just like, what about me? Come on. I'll fight the ninjas. I got this. And it's really funny, but it's also interesting because it was newspaper-based comic, so it's in strips rather than in larger panels.
Oh.
And so the book itself is kind of squat.
That's funny.
But I like Faith Erin Hicks a lot, and that one has always been one of my favorites. But yeah.
So I just remembered why I stopped watching it. Oh my gosh. I remember why I stopped watching She-Ra, the reboot of it.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped watching it, I think, because it was made by the same studio that made a reboot of Voltron. And I don't know if anyone knew about that. I think we talked about it with Ingrid once when she was still on the show.
Hi, Ingrid.
So that one came out a while ago. I think Ingrid brought up that show and I brought up that I had started watching it. And I think I just got to the last season of that show before I finally realized, man, this is really boring. Why am I still watching this? It was one of those realizations where it's like, man, I don't think I actually like this show. And it just kind of made me lose faith in the studio a little bit. That's why I stopped watching it. But then I found out Noelle Stevenson was on it. Mm-hmm. And I found out about some stuff that happened in the latest season. And I thought, oh, now I need to watch it.
Yeah.
That's why I stopped. Because they had like a whole thing around rebooting cartoons from that era.
Yeah, I think they're not rebooting, but I think it's both Netflix, but I'm not sure, that have projects in the works for both the Bones series by Jeff Smith, which I love, and Sweet Tooth by Jeff Lemire, which I also love. And I don't know when they're going to be released, but I'm very excited to check those out. Those are two series that I loved so much.
I had no idea they were going to make a Bones series. Oh my gosh.
That's what I heard.
That's so exciting. I can't wait. It's awesome. I really hope it's good. I really, really hope it's good.
I have faith. Selena, what have you been reading, watching, enjoying?
Everything except for doing homework and going to school.
You haven't been doing those things or you haven't been enjoying them?
I haven't been enjoying them. And also I forgot there was a homework due Friday. Had to do it yesterday. Sad.
Oh.
But good thing is that school ends this Friday, and bad thing is that I have to return my stuff next Friday because there's one book from the school that I borrowed that I can't find.
Hmm.
It's called Charmed. Hmm. It's basically like about you being like a witch. Like basically, it's about this girl who wants to be a witch. But, yeah, that's all I remember, like, from the cover, because, like, I'm pretty sure I was like, oh, I'm going to start reading this, and then I only read 2 pages, because I got a headache.
And then it got lost.
Yeah, and then we did Just Dance, because my mom wanted to bring me outside, and I don't like going outside.
Not at all.
When I have to go back to school again.
When you have to be outside?
Yeah, because I want to go on the bus because that was like my pride and joy, because like I could have my new phone like on the bus, and also I can just say hello to like, yeah, no, I don't have any friends that go on the bus. I do have one, but like she rarely goes. And also I haven't been enjoying shows because I actually have been drawing a lot digitally.
Oh, cool. What do you use to draw?
I draw people because I'm confident that, like, I'm really bad at drawing anything other than people.
But you do it on a computer?
No, I do it on my phone.
Oh, on your phone.
Yeah, there's an app.
What's the app that you use?
Yeah, what is it?
Ibis Paint X. Yeah, I just paint X.
And you just use your finger?
Yeah.
Wow.
You have a stylus or something like that?
No, I don't use stylus.
I don't know how good I'd be at drawing with my finger.
It's like drawing with your finger. Okay, I'm not the best at explaining it. It's like drawing with a pencil, except you're drawing with no pencil, and it's actually a comprehension of your mind, and it's actually wood that you're holding, except there's air. Okay, I'm bad at explaining stuff.
I don't understand how you would like get the shapes right and everything if you were just using your finger. That seems really difficult.
What do you mean? Because they have rulers. They have like the circular ruler. They have like the lines. Like
you mean like the different tools on the program?
Yeah, like they have tools on the program, like the circle tool, the line tool, okay, I'm pretty sure that's all the tools. Sadly, they have a square tool because I want to make a square for some reason. Can't remember why I wanted to make a square, but I wanted to make a square. They have the oval tool. They have the lines tool, because who wants to move the ruler? Because, like, you have to actually move the ruler, draw for it.
How do you, like, edit it all?
I don't really know what you mean by edit it all, but if you mean, like, the speed paint, like, you go into the gallery, and then there's going to be, like, a triangle, like, a play button. And then you press that button and it shows what you just did. And
okay. I think I get it. You just speed it up from there.
Yeah.
Do you share your artwork with people, or do you just do it for fun for yourself?
I do it for myself, and I also do it because of my TikToks.
Oh, yeah.
Amelia will probably know because she has seen my bead paint edit stuff. Okay, I'm going to stop talking right now.
Well, does anyone have anything coming up that they're especially excited for? Lena?
School, I hope. I don't want to go back to online school
because
that's not fun.
So you're excited for in-person school?
Yes.
Hopefully in the fall.
Yes, because that means I finally get a locker. I have been waiting.
You don't get lockers until fifth grade?
I think we do, or it's just a waste of lockers that we have, because we have tons of lockers. And we didn't get lockers in third grade because apparently the third graders before us in third grade, I mean fourth grade by the way, were like, oh, here's my locker combination. It's 11111.
They weren't really up on their security.
Yes, they're basically just saying, hey, mug me.
Thanks.
I didn't even use my locker this year at all.
Wait, how?
I don't know. Because I was a senior, I had, physically, my workload was light enough for me to carry around in my book bag.
I don't know.
Mentally, no, but physically, yes. So yeah, I pretty much just had, like, textbooks and notebooks and stuff that I could just carry around.
I don't know.
So I never bothered to visit my locker.
Wait, like, even when you brought your stuff home on, like, the last day of actually going to school?
Yeah, I just carried my stuff around.
Wait, are you sure it was light? Because, like, my back almost broke while I was climbing up that hill.
My parents don't think it's light, but maybe I'm just used to it because I've been through it so many times. But I pretty much just had some notebooks, some books, and the heaviest thing in there was my AP Environmental Science textbook. That's the heaviest thing in my bag, and I'm bringing that back on a day that they sent us an email that I can't remember right now. I'll be bringing all my stuff back.
Yeah, backpacks get heavy.
They do.
I've had to move people's bags before, like if they put them in a funny spot in the library, and then I just like move it to a chair or something. And I'm always like, oh my gosh, this is so heavy. I can't believe they carry this around.
Yeah.
Your poor shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I was there at one point in my life. Mm-hmm. I also don't remember using my locker very much. I think I mostly used it to like put my coat away.
Speaking of backpacks, the secret to not have your backpack break like for the 15th time this year, and I figured it out when it was literally quarantine. Well, not quarantine, but like at the end of the year, you guys get it. And So you have to get a sports bag from like a sports store, like, you know, the hiking bags. Mm-hmm. So the backpacks for school aren't really built that well. They're built like willy-nilly, like, oh, let's just have like this one piece of string that everyone has to carry around, and then boom, that's what we call a backpack.
Oh, you have a string backpack. No, I have the strap.
That was just a joke. Like,
I thought you meant you actually had like the drawstring backpack. So I'm like, man, that must be awful.
That must hurt.
Because those things like would cut into your shoulders if you had to carry them around with like textbooks in them and stuff.
I meant that as a joke because like they always like scrunched up into like a roll that you could like eat like cinnamon rolls. And so the ways that your backpack could never break is the hiking bag, because they build them more sturdier because they probably think you're going to hike up Mount Everest.
Yep. And it's higher stakes if like your bag breaks and you're on a hiking trip.
Yeah. So that's why they make sports bags like really good.
I have seen people walking around with like whole duffel bags in school before.
Well,
yeah. I even asked my friend when she came with her basketball practice bag, whose body are you hiding in there?
And that's what they seem big enough to do, don't they?
Yeah. I don't know how strong she is, but I bet she was hiding a body because it was big enough for all the tiny people to fit in there.
All of them.
I think I could fit myself in a duffel bag if I really had to. Well, if it was like a life or death situation, I think I could fit myself in a duffel bag. I gotta keep one eye open tonight, I guess.
On that note, we're just about out of time for today.
We were still talking about bookish things. There were book bags, there were books
bags.
In the book bag. This counted. This was valid.
Yeah, just watch your back, everyone. We hope everyone has a really great week with lots of quality reading time. Yay. And stays out of the duffel bags.
Yes, please.
And has a nice sturdy backpack.
Yeah.
And maybe gets a locker someday.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, have a good week. Happy reading.
Bye.
Happy reading. Bye.
You gotta feel it.
All right, right now we have Jack Mabb here, the Columbia County Director of Health, on the line to update us on what's going on with COVID-19 in Columbia County, and I guess the area too. How are you doing this morning, Jack?
Not so bad, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on and telling us all about what's going on. I guess the big news is you've got some regular testing every Tuesday now.
Well, we've had four clinics so far. We had one at Columbia Green Community College. That was our first clinic. We did 72 folks there. We had two at John L. Edwards here in Hudson, where we required appointments, and we did a little bit of a walk up, and we had over 40 at both of those. And then our most successful clinic was last Sunday at the Chatham Fairgrounds, where we had 113 people tested. So we've moved on to schedule some regular testing for the next three Tuesdays, the 16th, 23rd, and the 30th. We're going to be back at John L. Edwards, but this time we're not requiring registration, so people can just come over and be tested.
So there's no requirement of that you have to be sort of sick or you have to be an essential worker. It's just anybody that feels like they might need a test can come.
Absolutely, and that's the direction that most of the testing has been moving in anyway, that we did get our first responders and essential workers tested, and they certainly welcome to come over. But now we're moving on to the public, and anybody who wants to be tested can do so. And of course, with the phases that are coming and hair salons that are going to be opening, they need to be tested every 2 weeks. So we certainly plan on having regular clinics so that we can help those folks out as well as others who want to get tested.
And the numbers in general in Columbia County, is everything really getting better, or are there things that you're worried about?
Well, I think everybody in the business is worried about us going through the phases and getting up to phase four and doing some larger scale events and gyms opening and whatever. We're worried about the spike that's likely coming, although most of the experts at the top are saying the fall. What we're seeing now with the numbers, we have 414 positives. That's from the nasal pharyngeal testing, but we've tested 7,123. And I've been on your show before where I was, where I basically said, you know, one in seven people who were being tested, and this is a historical, goes back a couple months, one in seven were positive. Now we're up to about one in 15. That could suggest that it's not spreading as rapidly in the population. That's also consistent with the fact that we're doing a lot more testing. We've tested with the nasal pharyngeal, we've tested 7,125 people, but we've also had almost 2,000 people tested with the antibody test. So between the two, we've tested over 9,000 people in the county, and only 157 tested positive with the antibody test. The other thing that's unique to Columbia County is we have Barnwell Nursing Home that has been in major crisis. They're up to 142 positive residents, and Pine Haven had 42 positives, and if you add on the staff that were associated with that, that's about approximately 280 people out of the 414. So when you really look at community spread, we've got about 130 cases, and I think that means we've done a good job in the community paying attention, socially distanced, and wearing our masks.
And I know you're not an expert in Greene County, but I think that's basically been the same in Greene County, that almost all of the problem has been in the nursing homes, and there has been a littler community spread than in other areas around the country.
Yeah, and I've looked at those numbers not in the last week, but I've looked at those numbers, and that is true. It's again, I think it has to do with the rural nature of our counties, but I think it really does is a testament to how people are obeying the rules.
It seems like more science is coming out lately that the spread is concentrated in places where people are in indoor settings together. So more people live together or work together in close indoor places. Is that what you're sort of seeing?
Well, certainly metropolitan areas if you've been to New York City and you walk down one of the streets in Manhattan, it's really hard to socially distance when people are going back and forth to work. I think that it's a very difficult environment. You know, contrast that with Columbia and Greene counties. It's easy to social distance, and I think that people, so it is very true, I think, that the concentrations, the spikes are likely to come in urban areas.
We're now seeing national officials go into indoor diners without masks on. Yesterday we saw the vice president do that. And then the president has this indoor rally of thousands and thousands of people inside. Isn't that sort of the most dangerous sort of behavior in this pandemic?
Well, short answer is yes, I think. You know, when you talk about the virus being droplet-driven and you talk about people at a rally who are, you know, standing up and yelling, you know, their support for the candidate and whatever, the power of those droplets coming out of those lungs are going to go a lot further than the 6 to 8 feet that they talk about under normal conversational circumstances. So I think that the last place that I would want to be at would be at a rally. And or, you know, in an urban area. And honestly, I'm a gym rat. People who know me know that I frequent the gym. When they do open up, I'm not going to go back because I don't think that you can, you know, safeguard yourself.
Yeah. It seems like the same way with there was that famous case in, I think, Washington State when this began of the choir practice where they sang very loudly for an hour and a half. One person, I think, arrived with it and then, many people had it 2 weeks later.
Yeah, there's a perfect example, and that's been well documented. It's going to be interesting to see what comes of the rally next week. I do know that the president's people are requiring everybody who attends, and we're talking, I believe, 30,000. It's somehow as was the expectation to sign off on a waiver that if they get the virus, they can't sue. So I think there's an acknowledgement there. You know, as far as of the vice president going into a restaurant, he and the president, neither of them have really been perfect role models when it comes to using masks. And I know that I've looked forward to going back to a restaurant and having a bite to eat. And I plan on wearing a mask in and wearing a mask in between dining. So I think it's the new normal.
And so locally, outdoor dining has begun, and have you had any problem with that, or has that been going well?
Well, it's going well. We're not getting any reports of people who feel that it's being abused or misused. It is kind of early to see if there's going to be any spikes as a result of it, and who knows if you can actually track that anyway, if it is. I think outdoor dining is fine, and I've been a supporter all along of indoor dining at a reduced capacity so that people are spaced out. We do have to get back to some semblance of our lives before this all started.
Yeah, and on that same sort of issue, have you seen the plans for Hudson to move businesses out onto the sidewalks with limited car travel on Warren Street? And is that a good idea?
I was given a preview of that plan on Thursday morning, and I offered them my total support for it. I think it's good for the city. The only ironic thing is, of course, we are a destination for folks from New York City, and those are the kind of things that they find attractive. And so the only thing I pointed out to them is that by doing it, you may well attract more people from New York than we normally do. But I think that it's great for the city. I think it opens things up, and I drive by on my way to work on Saturday. I drive by the farmer's market, and I take a good look as I go by, and I see, I think people are, by and large, obeying the rules, and I see a lot of masks. I see a lot of people social distancing, and hopefully when we get Warren Street opened up under those circumstances, all that's going to continue.
And are you at all worried about masks? Do you get complaints about people saying everybody is being forced to wear a mask, or do you get complaints saying that this business is not making people wear masks when they go in and they don't feel safe in that business? Or
I've never received a complaint from people that because they have to wear a mask. We do get plenty of complaints, people turning in restaurants and takeout folks, places and things like that, where people aren't wearing masks. There is no enforcement that the health department does, but the sheriff's department does handle those calls. And actually this week I was on a conference call with him, and he says it's been relatively quiet. So I think by and large, people are obeying the rules. But we do get those complaints about places not requiring masks or not encouraging them.
And the science I keep reading seems to be backing up more and more that the masks really do help lower the spread of COVID-19.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same studies, and it's pretty dramatic. And that and the social distancing, although I think that it's not a complaint, but the only thing I note is that, you know, the governor, when he came out with the mask thing, basically said, if you cannot be 6 feet away, wear a mask. And now you got most places out there that require you to be 6 feet away and wear a mask. I think it's a little overkill to some degree. I get yelled at if I'm within six feet and I have a mask on. But I think it's all good because people are taking this seriously. But the masks make a huge difference.
And so you haven't seen a problem with because early on the government and science officials were saying don't wear a mask, and then they did. And there's been some other times when scientists or government officials have learned something and have told people a whole different thing or announced something and that don't have full plans for it quite yet. You've seen that with the contact tracing in Columbia County. Is that undermining faith in government and science officials?
Well, I think maybe to some degree. This is going to sound like a cynical statement, but I think that I think that the government knew that masks could make a difference before they came out and said, "Yeah, maybe you should wear a mask." And I think the practical reason why they were saying, "Oh, you don't need to bother with a mask," is that there weren't enough of them. The supply wasn't there, and they wanted to make sure that medical people who clearly really need the masks in the circumstances they find themselves in had masks. And I think I admit it's a cynical view, but I think they waited to say we should wear masks because they didn't have the quantity of masks. And when they figured out that maybe we do have enough masks, then they started talking about wearing masks.
And some other issues. I think people are somewhat understandable that the scientists didn't know anything about this 6 months ago, and they're learning more, and so things are changing partially because they're learning more.
Yeah, I think that's true. And now the latest, I don't know if you've seen this, but the virus in Florida, I believe they've done some research and found that the virus has mutated and made it easier for itself to attach and infect us. And of course, coronaviruses in general constantly mutate. And I think we were hoping against hope that this one might not, but it's interesting. It doesn't make it more lethal, but it does make it more virulent, where it can pass on, where it could infect people. So I'm watching those studies to see how that turns out.
And I guess you're watching Florida and Arizona and these other states where things are getting much worse, even though government officials largely continue to open things up more. I guess the airports are starting to kick up a little bit. Metro North is going to, I think, 61% capacity or trains on Monday. So there's more transportation happening. So I assume that you're worried that there's going to be more spread from other parts of the country?
Well, I think there's going to be more spread. I think there's going to be more spread in the community because even if we don't, with Metro North opening up and allowing more ridership, it was always heavily used from Hudson and from the Capital Region to New York and back. We're going to get more spread, and I think that that's sort of anticipated. But I do think that there's a balance there, and I'm glad I'm not the governor needing to make these decisions. Because there's a balance. You can't destroy the economy and people's lives. You have to get back to some semblance of life, but it has to be under controlled circumstances. And I think we're doing well in New York. Arizona, Texas, Florida, those are scary places.
And locally, the scary places have been the nursing homes. Are you getting more cooperation from the nursing homes now? The one in Ghent, I think, wasn't being very cooperative for a while. Are they being...
Yes, they're testing, the one in Ghent has tested all their residents, and they you have to give them kudos. They're doing a good job. They don't have any positive among their residents. The twice weekly testing that they all have to do, all the nursing homes have to do for staff, has produced some interesting results, because they do have some positives at all nursing homes, have some positive staff, and one or two, you know, whatever. But I think it's the weekly, now that we're back to weekly testing, which would make a little bit more sense than twice a week, I think it's going to continue to turn up people who end up positive, who could have an impact on that nursing home. So I think it's a good thing. But these places have removed those staff, you know, put them under quarantine and got them out of the staff in a hurry. And generally speaking, you know, I know just this week, Pine Haven, which was our first outbreak, has decided to retest some of the folks that were positive to see if they still are positive. And they're reporting right back to us. And so I to answer your question, yes, that we are getting more cooperation out of the nursing homes.
And is there any thing you need that you need more of? Is Columbia Memorial set right now? Do your own workers have enough protective gear, or is there anything that you want or need right now?
Well, I think that the PPE equipment is out there now. It's available for purchase. We just this week closed a deal with Columbia Memorial Hospital as our community partner on this to purchase antibody testing tests, because I think that's the next thing. I mean, I think we're going to be swabbing people for the rest of the year and maybe well into 2021, because it tells you if you're currently contagious. But a lot of people out there want the antibody test. They want to know if that illness they had back in December, January, or February was actually COVID-19. And so the antibody test is the next thing. And we can't purchase them ourselves because the suppliers can't sell to us. They have to sell to what's called a CLIA lab, somebody who can actually read the test, and that's Columbia Memorial Hospital. So we are purchasing with them 1,000 test kits. We should have them in the coming weeks, and we're going to have clinics. And those things are read on the spot. They're read within 15 minutes, and people can know within 15 minutes. And, you know, people should stay tuned for when we do those clinics, because we're going to be out there testing.
And those clinics aren't going to be at the hospital. They're going to be out in different community places.
We're going to take it out into the community. The hospital has to provide a lab tech to actually read the results there on site. But that's the agreement that we have with them. And they've been a good partner. They've been a good partner in this. And thankfully, the whole nasopharyngeal testing supply has opened up a lot. We just, I think 2 weeks ago, we got 1,000 kits from the state. And we've also purchased another 2,000, where we should get another 1,000 kits within the next week or two on our purchase. So we're going to be set with that. PPE, we're just purchasing some equipment. So that's becoming more readily available. We need people who want to be tested. If there are folks out there that are in the medical field who, let's say, retired and they want to help us out with the swabbing, we'd be glad to have them. We have a couple of really hardcore volunteers who show up for us at every event. But, you know, we'd be glad to have them.
All right, we've been speaking with Jack Mabb, the Director of Public Health for Columbia County. Is there anything else you want to tell people, Jack?
No, again, I just want to make sure that we repeat the fact that for the next three Tuesdays, we're going to be having a clinic at John L. Edwards. No appointments are necessary. This is the nasal pharyngeal. This is the swab up the nose, and it will tell you if you're infectious at this time. And I invite everybody to come by. It is 9 to 11 every day over at John L. And we pick those times because it's summer, and the way the building is angled, it can get pretty hot over there in the afternoon. So we're going to do it 9 to 11 in the morning, and I invite everybody to come by who wants to be tested.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Mark Dunley, and we're joined by Nick Anclada Malinowski, who is the Civil Rights Campaign Director for Vocal New York. And we'll be talking about some of the things the legislature did and did not do this week on criminal justice reform. We've had Vocal New York on a number of times on our station, but Nick, maybe just give us a quick introduction. You know, what is Vocal New York, and, you know, what are some of your key issues you focus upon?
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Mark. Again, my name is Nick Encalada Malinowski. I'm the Civil Rights Campaign Director at Vocal New York. Vocal New York is a grassroots membership-based organization. Our main office is in Brooklyn, New York, but we have chapters around the state in the Capital Region, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, and Westchester. And we do organizing and policy work in four main issue areas, working to end mass incarceration, end homelessness, end the epidemic of HIV and AIDS, and ending the war on drugs. And we've been working on those areas for 20 years, statewide, building power of people who are directly impacted by those issues to create change.
Now, certainly over the years, Vocal New York has been one of the most visible presence at the state capitol, very diverse group of people, I guess ex-offenders as well. So how did you guys feel about, what the legislature did this week? Particularly, I know you guys worked a lot on the 50A issue for many years.
Yeah, thanks for that question. The Repeal 50A is a bill that we have worked on for a number of years. Some people see it as a policing bill, but we also see it as, a court process bill. It affects jails and prisons as well. So, what the bill does is protects or makes private discipline records for police,